Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, the stories, and events of Central Iowa. I am the host of your show today, Jim Werbel. Today we have a show on different religious faiths and aims. We are in the middle of the Jewish High Holidays right now. We will be exploring the meaning of these 10 days with John Plessence, who is the cantor for the Ames Jewish Congregation. We also have on the show Eric McCabe, who is a Zen Buddhist priest and conducts workshops on different topics from a Buddhist perspective. We will be discussing his spiritual practice as a Zen Buddhist. Before all of this, we have Mary Rankin back to the show, and she will be bringing with us Shelley Codner, who will be discussing the Iowa Waste Exchange. Let's begin the show. Let me invite back Mary Rankin, who is a community resource on sustainability. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, you have someone with us today. Would you mind introducing her to us?
It is my pleasure and privilege to introduce Shalene Codner. And, you know, you talked about today's show being all about different religions. And I would say the faith-based community has some of the strongest convictions and connections to sustainability. So I think it's a really interesting connection we're making today. But Shalene, I know her as Shelley because I've worked with her for many years. She has a really interesting connection to sustainability.
Really?
Through what she does with what people consider to be waste or garbage. Shelley makes wonderful connections all across our state with this stuff that people think has no use anymore. Shelley finds really wonderful, meaningful connections that really impact lives, impact organizations, impact communities. And it's really my pleasure. I think she's going to do a much better job than I would talking about what she does for the Iowa Waste Exchange.
So we're talking about garbage.
We're
today.
Talking about garbage, yeah.
Interesting.
But it's the perspective of garbage, right?
Yes.
It's very different. And Shelley certainly has a wonderful perspective to share through the work that she's done. And so I am very pleased to introduce Shalene Codner with Iowa Waste Exchange and let her talk a little bit about what she does and what the mission of the Waste Exchange is.
Go ahead, Shelley.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much. The Iowa Waste Exchange is a program of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And basically what our overlying goal is to reduce waste going into landfill. But we're able to help business, industry, individuals, nonprofits, organizations, schools, just about anybody who calls us. So that's basically our goal, is to reduce waste from the landfill and find alternative uses for it.
Get other people to reuse it, whatever it is?
Well, we follow the waste management hierarchy. So reuse is way up there. That's the top one. Well, reducing is the top one. We want to reduce the waste we produce, but then we also want to reuse it. If we can't find a reuse for it, then we send it off to recycling. But reuse is a priority in that hierarchy.
So you help other people find things that other people don't want? Is that kind of like Craigslist?
It is kind of like Craigslist, except we're dealing with not one book or one stuffed animal. We're dealing with warehouses full of material. We also line up the logistics and get transportation for folks that need help with that. We also help in writing grants and technical assistance like that.
So you largely help bigger businesses.
We help big, small, in between, medium sized, mom and pops. We help whoever calls us and needs help.
So all they need to do is call you and say, lots of this.
I've got blank. Can you help me find a home for it?
This sounds interesting. Can you give me some examples of different firms that you've helped?
Well, I think we have our regular things that we work with that everybody's somewhat familiar with now after all these years of recycling, paper, plastics, metals, those type of things. But the ones that are probably that stick in my mind the most are the ones that take kind of outside of the box brainstorming to figure out if that material can be used for a different application than its purpose. One of the ones that I thought of on the way down this morning were a company that had washing machine windows that were off spec. When they got them on the manufacturing line, they didn't fit into the washing machines, the front load windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to get them to be recycled, but it was a problem or a challenge because it was labor intensive to take them out of all the packaging. So I contacted one of my contacts in Des Moines, an art gallery there, and they hooked me up with an artist in Kansas City. His name is Stretch. He took those two semi-loads full of washing machine windows, and he actually, 6 months later, was commissioned to do the artwork for the Davis Brown Towers in Des Moines. So he used those, and there's LED lighting, and they're in the lobby of that building. So he used that as an art installation. That's one of the things that's most pleasing is when you can think of kind of a different application for the material. Another of the things that I thought of was, while, you know, we can deal with industrial sludges and cardboard and those type of things, my favorite matches are the ones that have to do something with helping humanity. So we have that human element. Finding things of value that other people can use. Some examples of that. And these generally are the most challenging. They take a lot of organization, a lot of lining up volunteers, a lot of lining up logistics, trucking. The biggest one that I could think of this morning that we worked on was a project where there was 50,000 square feet of carpeting available in the Des Moines area.
That's a lot of carpeting.
It was a lot of carpeting, and it needed to be moved.
I need some new carpeting. You should have called me.
It needed to be moved, and it was coming to the point where this wasn't going to happen because we couldn't get one group or organization to take the lead. So we've got several groups and organizations to volunteer their time, and we got that carpeting from Des Moines up to folks in northern Iowa that had been hit by floods and tornadoes.
Oh, wow.
And, again, that took a lot of logistical – there was a lot of challenges in getting that done, but we had great support, wonderful volunteers, folks – came from everywhere to help us load it up, unload it, get it to the people that needed it. So those are the ones, I guess, that are the most ethically pleasing. And, not just because we matched up these great, valuable materials with folks that really needed them, but just the camaraderie of working as a team to get this done and kind of rising above ourselves and getting out of our bubble.
So let me get this. The lion's share of what you're doing is pretty much the conventional, like metals and cardboard and things like that. But every now and then you get some really challenging things to do.
Yeah, and I would say that it's probably a 50-50 split.
Really, 50-50
Mary
split.
Mary can call me with some interesting things from time to time.
Mary, what did you call her with?
I am guilty, most definitely. Well, I work a lot with people in the community, certainly businesses in the community, individuals in the community. But I also have a big part of my professional responsibilities being with Iowa State University.
Right.
And Iowa State came to me many times, but just this last summer, I know we had 500 curtains, big long curtains that were in one of our a few of our residence halls, and they had been used to cover hanging garments, in kind of an open closet.
Okay.
And they were doing some renovations. And I even remember, I think, when I came up for camps, right, before I was even a student at Iowa State, probably these same curtains. So they'd been there a while. But anyway,
to get rid of these things.
500 curtains. And they had come to me and said, do you even think that there's a need? And I said, well, let me contact Shelley. Shelley's going to know. And we found, Shelley, I think at least five that I can think of right offhand, nonprofits that were so excited to get them. And they ended up going for uses related to community theater. Also, there was this wonderful, wonderful youth gardening and, you know, raising local produce sort of educational program. And they had a greenhouse that desperately could use some shading in the summer. And they took a few hundred of these and called me a few days later to thank me again for the impact that it had made. And, you know, this is – these are curtains, you know, curtains that most everyone would have thought, oh, these are useless, you know, throw them away.
Interesting.
But yet we still have – and I know Shelley is contacted continually by people, just so, so appreciative.
So, Shelley, what is the weirdest thing you've ever managed to try to help?
Well, there's been a lot of weird things. Usually the weirdest things that we find, we do waste sorts for companies and organizations that are trying to really, you know, want to talk trash, but they want to talk trash intelligently and they want to know what they're actually throwing away.
Mm-hmm.
So we find a lot of probably not mentionable on the radio type things in those different when we do those waste sorts. So, 1 year we did 28 of them throughout the month of June. We did several state parks and then we did, a convenience store chain in Iowa. So we found a lot of interesting
things.
So you actually get in and we're actually diving in the dumpster, pulling things out and categorizing it. Then we weigh it to see what's actually going in there. We did a big one in 2010, a very big one at Iowa State in 2010.
What was that one like, Mary?
Well, that one was very odor-filled, as I recall, and also very eye-opening. You know, what it allowed us to do at Iowa State was to really look at the things that were ending up in the trash to determine how we could be looking at increasing and expanding our waste reduction and waste diversion opportunities. One of the things that came out of it was a number of disposable coffee cups. And, of course, we would think that we had a number of disposable coffee cups, but there were so many that we actually had some conversations with ISU Dining. They actually started going back and tracking a bit more the number they had sold and thought, wow, we could really not only, you know, reduce the amount of waste, but save some money from buying all these cups to provide to customers. So they ended up raising their discount amount if you brought your own mug. And very quickly, you know, in the five figures, we're reducing the amount of disposable cups that they had sold. And so it really assisted us from a standpoint of being more efficient in our waste, more cost effective, more budget considerate. And also to the volunteers that assisted us, I think very eye-opening for a number of students related to their decisions they're making when they're at that trash can.
This is garbage is more interesting than I thought it was. Amazing. How do you find people to deal with these waste or treasures or whatever you want to call it, Shelley?
My networks, Mary and I have been talking trash for a very long time. So we actually do
trash talk. I can't believe it.
Yes. And we get paid to do it.
Yeah, that's exciting part.
But we, you know, I've got a lot of networks by now. But to directly answer that question, it's basically from referrals. I work with most of the landfills in my area, which is a 12-county area, including Story County. The colleges in my area. Iowa State is obviously the largest one, but I have other colleges, community colleges in the area. And it's basically referrals. Oh, you have stuffed animals. You have a warehouse full of stuffed animals. Let's call the Iowa Waste Exchange. I bet they can help. So I get a lot of referrals.
How do people contact you then? I mean, what's your contacts? If somebody has something like that, how do they reach you?
They can call me.
Phone number, please.
319-404-1942.
You want to repeat that again?
319-404-1942. We also have a website. You can go to the DNR's website, which is www.iowadnr.gov. And I also have a Facebook page for my area, which is Iowa Waste Exchange Area 2.
We'll post all of that on our website.
Fantastic.
So if people need to contact you, they can do that. Do you have any final comments, either one of you?
Just I appreciate the time that you've allowed us to share our trash stories and talk about garbage.
Yeah, and I would just encourage, you know, Shelley has mentioned the number of businesses, nonprofits, that sort of thing she's assisted. I really think that what she is able to do and able to do for folks is sort of a diamond in the rough still in our community even. So I really encourage businesses, give her a call. If you don't know of a specific item you have right now, she would love to come in and do a waste exchange, help you save money, help you increase your sustainability, and help you make a difference to so many.
Thank you both, and I look forward to seeing you again next month, Mary, with
another
topic.
I look forward to it.
Thanks so much, Jim. Have a great day.
You too.
When you stand at the sink, did you ever think about the water running down the drain? That it used to be in the deep blue sea, and before that it was rain. Then it turned to snow for an Eskimo to use in a snowball fight. Then it floated south till it reached your mouth to help you brush your teeth tonight. Someone's gonna use it after you. Someone needs that water when you're through. Someone's gonna use it after you. When you sneeze like thunder, did you ever wonder if the air you set in motion might have helped to form a tropical storm way out in the Western Ocean? Could have been blown out of a blue whale spout as he dove beneath the seas. And now that air is in your care till you're finished with your sneeze.
This is Local Talk, and I am your host today, Jim Werbel. Today's show has a focus on spiritual and religious practice. We are in the middle of the Jewish High Holidays. This is 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I would like to welcome John Pleasants to the show. John is a faculty member at ISU and is also the cantor for the Ames Jewish Congregation. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Jim.
So, John, tell me, what is a cantor?
So a cantor is a person that leads the chanting during services. A cantor is a song leader, so the congregation itself will be singing along with various things, and so I facilitate that. I'm technically a cantorial soloist, a real cantor. It actually would have gone and had almost as much training as a rabbi and be ordained as a cantor. I'm a mere biology professor, so I've picked this up on the side, and so I'm technically a cantorial soloist.
So that's a category. But you have actually taken classes in singing.
I've taken classes in singing, and there are lots of resources now for congregations that clearly can't afford or have a true cantor. And so there are resources on the web and CDs and so on, so you can pick up the music that you need to do for services.
So congregation singing is very important for Jewish services.
Absolutely.
All right. So, well, this is Rosh Hashanah. Tell me what Rosh Hashanah means.
Well, Rosh means head in Hebrew. So Rosh Hashanah is the head of the year, so it's the beginning of the year. It's the new year. It's the Jewish New Year.
Okay.
It's 5776, by the way. If you the old joke is I'm still writing 5775 on my checks.
All right. Well, how does the Jewish New Year differ from the Christian New Year?
Well, I guess the Christian New Year would start on January 1st with a lot of hoopla, and there's certainly celebration on Rosh Hashanah. I think I don't know that there's January 1st is something we would call the Christian New Year. It is a new year. There isn't anything special that people are supposed to do except have parties and so on. But the Jewish New Year begins, as you indicated, this 10-day period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of reflection and introspection. So it is a celebration. We're starting things over, but it's also something where you're going to have to start looking at yourself and thinking about the things that you've done. It's sort of a time to do accounting. It's more like April 15th tax day than anything else.
So it's a time of – this is a time of personal reflection as well as social gatherings.
Exactly.
Why does the Jewish calendar start sometime in September?
Well, so this – in the Bible that there is a reference to Rosh Hashanah. It's in the seventh month, at the beginning of the seventh month, you shall have this festival with the blowing of the shofar. And so this is the seventh month. This is the month of Tishrei. And so that's where it comes. It's also around the time of harvesting, and harvesting is always very – or biblically was very important thing. So we had Passover, the spring harvest, and now we're in the fall harvest period.
So the Jewish calendar was tied more to the seasonal practices rather than the solar timing of events.
Right, right. It's more of an agrarian based.
Yeah. It's also a lunar calendar. Is that correct? That's why the dates keep changing all the time.
Right. And sometimes you have to throw in a leap month to get everything to work out. But the months start with the new moon, so they start with the absence of the moon and then go on from there.
So what are some of the practices that different Jews do for Rosh Hashanah?
Well, of course, for all Jewish holidays, there has to be food. And so there are special foods for different holidays. And this one, apples and honey and apple cake and things like that are typically eaten. The idea there is we would like to have a sweet year. So the honey and honey cake reminds us of sweetness.
Mm-hmm. It's also the start of self-reflection. I know there's this thing called Tashlik. Do you want to explain what Tashlik is?
Well, Tashlik actually is something that's gotten more people have gotten more interested in this recently. It's not anything that's biblically based, but the concept here, what we did on Rosh Hashanah, which was on Monday, the day of this week, we took a walk from our synagogue, which is north of town, down to the Skunk River, and we carried with us some old bread and crackers and things like that, and we threw those into the Skunk River, and the concept there was sort of getting rid of your sins. So, as I said, it's something that people have kind of gotten more interested in doing. I think any ritual kind of thing has something about it that appeals to people, and taking a nice walk in the afternoon and going down to the river is a nice thing to do.
Some people do that, and some see it more symbolically as a way to perhaps deal with their regrets that they've done in the past.
Right, right.
All right. Well, you talked about that there's the blowing of the shofar, the commandment. What is the shofar?
Well, so a shofar is a ram's horn. I have one here, but
I see it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It looks like a ram's horn.
Right. It looks like a ram's horn.
I'll put it up to the microphone.
Yes, right. It can be made from the horn of other animals, and I've seen some that are a good almost 4 feet long that require some effort to blow. So the ram's horn makes a sound, and Jim, I understand you can blow this thing.
Well, I'm going to give it a try. I got to get my lips into shape.
All right. So while you're doing that, I have to give the commands for you to blow the shofar. So there are several different shofar sounds. I'm not going to have you go through all of them, but the main one is just a single blast of the shofar. So I'm going to give you the command, and you can do it. Tekiya. Very good. Very good.
What is the purpose of – what do you think is the purpose of the blowing of the shofar? Why is it so important for Rosh Hashanah to do that?
Well, if anybody had this radio program on and they were kind of dozing off, they probably came to attention when they heard that sound. And that's really the purpose of it. The purpose is to – there's a passage in in the service for Yom Kippur, awake you slumberers from your sleep. And so the sound of the shofar is to wake people up to say, look, you know, something big, something important is happening here. Pay attention.
You mean like Yom Kippur is going to happen?
Like Yom Kippur is going to come very soon. And so we have this 10-day period. We really have – you could start earlier than that. But the idea is that on Rosh Hashanah it is written. On Yom Kippur it is sealed. So we want to be written into the book of life for the coming year. And so between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we need to think about things we've done and ways that we can maybe change the awesome decree and make sure we're in the book of life for the new year.
And there's another book too that let me put it this way: you can either be written in the book of life or just nothing.
Right.
And we can understand. So explain, what is Yom Kippur literally? What does that mean?
So Yom Kippur, Yom just means day, and so Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. So this is the day when you do this fight. You've been doing this accounting now between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You've got a list of things that you know you need to work on. And so on Yom Kippur, you address those things. And one of the interesting things, it's a time of atonement. One very interesting difference between what happens on Yom Kippur and what might happen in a confessional, let's say, in a Christian synagogue, Christian church, would be that there's a passage for sins against God, the Day of Atonement atones, but for sins against man, the Day of Atonement does not atone until they make peace with one another. So a very key thing here is you can't just go to God and say, here are my sins, absolve me. If you've done something against somebody else, you have to actually go out and do something. You have to make amends with that person.
So that's part of the social thing. You're supposed to work with people that you have maybe offended and try to say – and to reflect together about those situations that have created tensions between a group of people or a couple of people.
Right. Very good.
So what is the memorial service for Yom Kippur? It's a very big service.
So there's part of the Yom Kippur service is called Yizkor, and Yizkor just means remembering. And we do this every week when we have services. We remember the people in our lives whose anniversaries of death occur around that period. But on Yom Kippur, in this Yizkor service, we remember everybody through all the past years that we've lost, and particularly with the Holocaust, we remember those as well.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of self-reflection. Tell me about some of the practices that happen with Yom Kippur.
Well, probably the main thing that happens is fasting. So beginning all of our holidays and Shabbat begin in the evening. They begin with sundown and go till sundown of the next day. So beginning with sundown of Yom Kippur, we don't eat and we fast all day long, no food, no water.
So so that's a part of the discipline of the self-reflection.
Exactly.
Well, and then finally there's Sukkot that happens real soon after. There's kind of three holidays that happen really close together.
Actually, we have four. So there's Simchat Torah that comes right after Sukkot. So everything's sort of jammed into the fall. Sukkot is sometimes referred to as the Festival of Booths. And this is – we talked before about the harvest aspect of this. So this harks back to a time when it would have been – harvest time. You got to go out into your fields and you can't be in your home. You set up a little tent and you're out there harvesting. And so it's a celebration of the first fruits of the harvest.
So there's all these events. Why the media seems to present that Hanukkah is much more important than the high holidays. Why is Hanukkah not that important? I mean, that's a comparative thing. Why are these holidays so much more important than than Hanukkah.
Why is this holiday different from all other holidays?
He's referring to Passover with that joke.
Right. That's an inside joke. Hanukkah is really a very minor holiday. It's been elevated to a more major holiday just in competition with Christmas. But there's sort of two main holidays of the year that are the most important. Yom Kippur would be one, and Pesach Passover would be the second.
So the idea that you really have to reflect on yourself and all your actions and the ways that you've offended not only God but other people becomes one of the central themes of Judaism.
Exactly.
Well, any other comments, John?
I don't think so.
Well, I appreciate you coming here to explaining some Jewish holidays that probably don't get enough visibility amongst the Gentile world.
And let me just say to you, Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
That means Happy New Year.
Thank you. This is Local Talk, serving 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story City and the surrounding area. I'm the host of today's show, Jim Werbel. So far in this show, we've heard from Mary Rankin and Shelley Codner on the Iowa Waste Exchange, interesting issues on garbage. And then we've had John Pleasance on regarding the Jewish High Holidays. If you've just joined us and would like to hear these earlier parts of the show, please go to our website, khoifm.org, and under the Listen tab, and then today's date for Local Talk. Next up, we have Eric McCabe in the studio here with us, who is a practicing Zen Buddhist and leads workshops in Zen Buddhism. He will be explaining to us his spiritual practice. This interview has landed in my lap in good Buddhist synchronicity, as he just recently called my wife, Delphine, the other day about a Waldorf preschool. And he did that because he just visited with a family member at a Waldorf school in Boulder, Colorado.
Right.
So is this coincidence or synchronicity, Eric?
It sounds like a little bit of both to me.
What's the difference?
I don't really know, and it doesn't really matter to me.
Okay. Well, so you're practicing Zen Buddhist.
I am a Zen Buddhist priest, yes.
And what is Zen Buddhism? How does that mm-hmm. differ from Buddhism in general?
Yeah. Are you sure you want to know?
Yes.
Well, this is, first of all, I'll talk a little bit about Buddhism.
Okay.
And I have to apologize up front because this isn't something that most people want to hear about. The first truth of Buddhism is that all things are suffering. All life is suffering. And we suffer because as we grow old, old age is a form of suffering. We suffer because of illness. We suffer because eventually we'll die. And all of the people that we love in our life are subject to change. There's no escape being separated from them. This is the central message of Buddhism, is that we are all suffering, yet there is an end to suffering. And that's what all of Buddhism is pointing to, is how do we end suffering?
Okay. So it's dealing with let me get this straight, that there's people are experiencing different types of pain, and that Buddhism is a path to help alliviate that.
Right.
That pain.
First is to be clear that we can't – part of our suffering stems from not acknowledging that we suffer.
Okay.
So that's step A. If we can first acknowledge that.
Give it a name.
Yeah, exactly. We're naming what's going on for us, that we're suffering. And this is a time of great suffering in our history, not just personally. Everybody suffers personally, but this particular, the time that we live in right now there's a huge amount of suffering all throughout the planet. And not just human suffering. All species around the planet are suffering. They're going extinct at the rate that the dinosaurs are going extinct. So if we're not awake to this degree of mass suffering, we're in denial.
Okay. So I hear you. What is Zen Buddhism?
So Zen can be – there's a lot of mystical stories about Zen Buddhism.
I know the koans definitely a part of Zen Buddhism.
Right. I'll sum it up in one word. It's a Japanese word. And the Japanese word is omoyari. Omoyari translates as consideration. All Zen points to is having a deeper consideration for others, considering the needs of others, and doing what we can to take care of each other, not excluding ourselves.
In some ways, I'm going to say that it sounds just, I can talk from my Jewish backgrounds, and we've just talked about the Jewish high holidays, and we acknowledge that we have some regrets in our lives and we are suffering, and we try to manage those through consideration of others and trying to, as John and I were talking about earlier, try to meet with others and try to deal with our regrets in a considerate way. So Zen Buddhism also has some parts of that, except this is the hallmark of the religion is always, always doing this, not just doing it during the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Right, right. Well, and my teacher would say we practice to remember that we forget.
Say that again.
We practice Buddhism, we practice Zen to remember that we forget. We forget what we're just talking about here. We forget that life is suffering because sometimes it's really grand, it's really great. We forget that all things are interrelated. It's not like we once we remember it, it's like sketched in our mind forever, etched in our mind. Because our minds, it's like the analogy the Buddha gave, it's like writing words on water. We write the word and it disappears almost immediately. Hmm. So we might be able to, you and I can talk about this, but the reality is we forget this the moment we go out the door here.
Life seems to disrupt that.
Yes.
Remembering of what we need to do.
Yeah. So Buddhist practice is about remembering. It's about remembering the preciousness of our life, cultivating gratitude for all of the things that we have. And learning how to take care of each other.
So what are your practices as a Zen Buddhist that you do on a daily basis mm-hmm. or a weekly basis? Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned at the beginning of the show that I was in Boulder, Colorado last week. In fact, I went with my family to Rocky Mountain National Park after being in Boulder. And even in Boulder, though, I had the same experience that everywhere I turned, I don't know if you've been to Rocky Mountain National Park, everywhere you turn, it's like, wow,
yeah.
This is awesome. You can't turn your eyes in a different direction and say, this is less beautiful than that. And in the same way, everything that we do has the potential to be spiritual practice. From waking up in the morning to going to bed at night, from brushing our teeth, using the toilet, washing our face, doing the dishes, doing the laundry, all of these things are spiritual practice from a Zen Buddhist perspective. This is normal, everyday things.
I don't like doing dishes. Tell me how that can be spiritual practice. That's suffering.
You know what? I didn't like doing the dishes either until my teacher showed me or kind of gave me some really helpful instruction tips about doing the dishes. I had just been at the monastery. I lived with my teacher for 15 years in her temple in central Pennsylvania. And this was the first month that I was there. I was washing the dishes, and she knew that I wasn't really enthusiastic about washing the dishes. So
I could see that I'm not the only one who finds some suffering in doing dishes.
Right, right. She said, that's not how you wash the dishes, Daishin. My Dharma name is Daishin. When you wash the dishes, it's like that movie, The Karate Kid. Have you seen The Karate
Yes.
Kid? Where he's painting the fence, he's cleaning the cars and waxing them. And then he realizes he's not just cleaning the cars. He's not just painting the fence. He's not just polishing the floors. He's actually learning karate. And in the same way, my teacher said, when we're washing the dishes, we're not just washing the dishes. We are polishing our own heart, our own mind. And when we look at anything, not just dishes, but anything that we touch with our hands or do as a part of our own self, as a part of our mind, then we're motivated to take good care of it. And in the process of washing the dishes, for example, if we can see ourselves as cleaning or purifying our own mind, it's a completely different experience. It's a spirit, if you want to call it a spiritual experience. But we're not thinking about, oh, I'm going to have a spiritual experience. We just simply wash the dishes. And there's a story. One of my favorite stories in Zen Buddhism is a monk who just enters the monastery. And he has breakfast. They eat. This is in ancient China. They're eating probably outside near a river. And the student goes to his master for instructions. And he asks him, he says, what should I do now? And the master said, did you finish eating? And the monk said, yes. And the master said, then wash your bowls. And when the monk heard the master say this, the story goes, he was enlightened. So what was he enlightened to? But we can think about that particular story, say, why is it so important to do this thing? And if we think beyond just the act of washing the dishes, think about the people. This is, again, going back to consideration. Think about the people who would be very unhappy if there was a stack of dirty dishes in the sink. I'll tell you... I think we can find world peace through washing the dishes. And I say that because I come from a family, I love my parents dearly. One of the things that I think part of what drew me to Zen Buddhism, the peace and the quiet, was because I never could find it at home.
I was going to ask, what was your religious background?
My religious background is Catholicism. But that's what I wanted to share is that my parents... they're from Brooklyn. They're Brooklyners from New York. And they fought like cats and dogs.
In your face, Brooklyners.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They didn't have any problem saying what they felt to you or anybody and to each other. And they would always be arguing about something. And still, even today, they'll deny this when they hear this on the show. They'll deny that they actually do this. And my father would say, oh, we're not fighting. We're just having a conversation. I'm like, well, that sounds like fighting to me. Anyways, I came home after doing this, practicing for 3 months with my teacher, the first 3 months, and I went to visit my family. And it typically at dinner time was a source of great arguments for my parents. And true to form, we were sitting down to dinner, having dinner, and there was an argument that brewed up over something. I can't even remember what it was. And I thought to myself, oh, here it goes again. I'm sitting at the table and there's an argument going on. I don't feel comfortable when people are yelling at each other. It's just my nature. Mm-hmm. Some people like that and they get into it, but I'm not that way. It takes a lot of energy out of me to move in that direction. So one of the things my teacher was saying is if there is something out there that bothers us, the first place to look is not out there, but in here, in our own hearts and our own minds. How are we a part of this problem? And for some reason, that was the first, in that instant, I thought, let me practice what my teacher had. I've been studying this for the past 3 months. Here's a perfect opportunity for me to practice this. Let me look inside. How am I part of their argument? Because up until that time, for the past over 20 years prior to that, I never saw myself as part of my parents' problem.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I saw it was their problem. Now I was looking at it different. How am I a part of this?
Things are interconnected.
Exactly. I looked at the table and I saw that we had all eaten and the dishes were still on the table. So I thought, this is the next thing that needs to be done. Like the master said, have you washed your dishes? You finished eating? Have you washed your dishes? No. I began to collect the dishes, bring them over to the sink and wash them. And I heard my mother say in the other room, first of all, they stopped arguing. So there's my plea for world peace through washing the dishes. They stopped arguing. And my mother said, thank God for Diane. Diane is my teacher's name. And so there you have it.
Interesting. Interesting story. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So you are a Zen Buddhist priest. Do you conduct workshops on different spiritual practices?
I do. I teach meditation. I lead retreats. I'm also a Zen calligrapher. I teach Zen calligraphy. Mm-hmm. And I teach yoga.
Quite a lot, then. Is yoga a part of Buddhist practice? I usually think that of Hindu.
Yeah, right. And I got into yoga because in Zen Buddhism we practice a lot of what's called sitting meditation, mm-hmm. just sitting. We'll sit still for hours on end for longer retreats. The longest retreat I've done is a 7-day retreat where we're sitting in meditation and stillness and in silence.
That's from a long time.
From 4 a.m. until 8 or 9 p.m. Of course, there's breaks in between mm-hmm. there, but we're sitting still for up to 10 hours a day, and it's very, very hard on the body, on the joints. So I, concomitant with Buddhist practice, I began practicing and studying yoga, as we know it today, hatha yoga, as a way to open the joints, relax, be able. And in fact, that was the original intent behind yoga, is to allow the monks to be able to sit for longer periods of time with greater ease and comfort.
Interesting. Do you want to highlight your website where people can find out more about these workshops?
Sure. You can find me at Zen Fields, fields as in a cornfield or a soy field, fieldsplural.org.
Okay, so if you're interested in any of these workshops, including yep. Zen calligraphy, my wife did calligraphy, more the Western word calligraphy, but it's with letters and things like that. But she's also been done calligraphy in the past.
I'll be teaching at the Octagon in this fall, and also at the Workspace at Iowa State.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So,
What final comments? How has Zen Buddhism changed your life?
Well, as I had mentioned earlier, we live in an incredibly difficult time. In fact, we live on the edge of an eon. The whole world, this planet that we live on, is changing. Geologically, things are changing at a pace equal to the dinosaurs. So what has Zen done for me? I am privileged to be awake at this time where everything is changing at an incredible speed. And we all are privileged to witness this changing of an eon.
I hear the word reverence, which you've also mentioned earlier, that it's made you a much more reverent person for things that are happening around you.
Yeah, definitely. That's the heart of it.
Thank you, Eric. Hey. I appreciate the time that you've spent with
us. Jim, thank you very much for inviting me on the show. I very much appreciate it.
This is Jim Warble, the host of your Today on Local Talk. We've just heard from Eric McCabe on Zen Buddhism. The songs we have heard today on today's show includes from Tom Chapin's CD, Someone's Going to Use It After You, and a cut from Songs of the Sephardim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk was engineered, by Jonah DeGeese. Thank you, Jonah. Today's show has focused on religious practices. We had John Pleasance on the show talking about the Jewish high holidays and Eric McCabe talking about Buddhism, Zen Buddhism in particular. I hope you've learned something new from these spiritual leaders in Central Iowa. We also heard from Mary Rankin and had her back to the show with Shelley Codner talking about the Iowa Waste Exchange and what businesses can do to recycle and reuse unneeded inventory and waste. In case you've missed some of the interviews today, which I've been very informative to me, you can listen to the entire show at our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. I'd like to real quickly give you our political updates for the calendar for who's coming to Central Iowa. Today, Lindsey Graham will be at the Moose Club. At the embassy, will be speaking at the Embassy Club in Des Moines today, and he'll be speaking also in Boone on Sunday at 9:30 a.m. at the Good News Coffee in Boone. Ted Cross and Bobby Jindal and Pataki and Rick Santorum, Scott Walker and Lindsey Graham will be at the Iowa State Fairgrounds at Knapp Learning Center on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Finally, Rick Santorum will be at the Iowa State Historical Museum on Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you've enjoyed the show, tell your friends. If you are interested in joining the reporting team, as I just recently did, and help being trained to have fun and learn interesting things, you can call 292-2878. That's 292-2878. And please check us out on our Facebook page. And your participation as an audience and your generous donations to help make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again on the radio.